sure we'll be able to use your hand. Well, okay.
Recording
All
in progress.
Right. It is 2 o'clock. Thank you, Fatma. You're right on it. We'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. Can we get a roll call, please?
Chair Lapine.
Present.
Mike Baker is excused. Nick Snead.
Present.
Will Ibershoff.
Present.
Tony Mitchell.
Present.
Cindy Potter.
Present.
City Attorney. No city attorney in person or online. Jason Pollock.
He's not making it.
Thank you. Jeff Hurd. Jeff Hurd is excused. Michelle Quinn. Michelle Quinn is present. Penny Cudimo.
Present.
Steve Webb.
Present.
Tim Plummer. Trent Titus.
Present.
Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you.
Chair Lapine, Michael Baker emailed me today about his absences as he's going to have for several weeks related to work.
Mm-hmm.
So because, one, he emailed me in advance and it's related to work, I told him that this would be excused absences.
Agreed.
So I just wanted the committee to understand that for the bylaws that that wasn't grounds for removal or anything. Those are excused absences.
Thank you. Any public comments in the room?
Yes.
Okay, there's none in the room, so we'll go to Zoom. Danielle Schmaltz, is that your name?
Yes, Danny.
Okay, you have 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, good afternoon. My name is Danny Schmaltz. I grew up in this community and have spent the vast majority of my life living here. I care deeply about the future of this community, and I hope to see this committee play a part in ending homelessness in Jefferson County. I would like to begin by acknowledging the work of this council and the steps that the city of Madras has already taken towards addressing the current rise in homelessness. Constructing and opening the new homeless service center was a big and necessary step in the right direction of providing resources to those living outdoors. However, I would echo a speaker from the previous meeting who stated that this should be considered just the first phase in the efforts to reduce homelessness in our county. While the Homeless Service Center provides emergency shelter and access to services, these should be considered just that, emergency services. Research shows that while many state and local entities often focus on funding these emergency shelters, only a small percentage of individuals who enter emergency shelters exit homelessness into permanent housing. The majority of individuals return to homelessness within 6 to 12 months of entering a shelter system. Additionally, studies have shown that for a variety of reasons, many homeless individuals do not prefer to live in shelters, but would rather exit homelessness into some form of transitional or permanent housing. I therefore urge this committee to continue its efforts to reduce homelessness by investing in Housing First programs. In the previous meeting, someone proposed that the next phase of addressing the community's homelessness crisis should center on constructing new service centers and treatment centers. And while service delivery is vital, treatment first approaches have been proven to be less effective than Housing First models. And Housing First aims to place homeless individuals in permanent supportive housing or to provide rental vouchers without requiring that they first enter a shelter system or graduate through a series of programs. Studies have shown that 70 to 90% of individuals who participate in Housing First programs remain housed 2 to 3 years after their placement. And so I ask the committee to consider the viability of these programs in our community by first assessing the number of available housing units in Jefferson County and the number of landlords willing to participate in supportive housing programs and rental voucher programs. If the demand of housing appears to exceed the number of rental units available, I would ask the committee to consider permanent housing projects like what is currently being proposed by the Warm Springs Housing Authority. Additionally, the point in time count that was conducted in 2022 by the Homeless Leadership Commission revealed that that there's a disproportionate number of homeless individuals in Jefferson County that identify as American Indian. I would therefore ask that the committee develop stronger partnerships with the service providers and representatives of Warm Springs, even potentially appointing a seat on this committee for one of those representatives. And I trust that this committee will continue to take steps forward to the betterment of this community as a whole, and particularly for the lives of those who are in need of housing. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Danny. Cindy, Coffee Cuppers, Mark Matthews talks about housing. Is that similar to what she's referring to, the Housing First?
No, that's not our program. That's a special.
Sorry, no, that's not our program. Our program is strictly through with mental health illness, and it's a rental assistance, and they pay a share of their rent, and we pay some of the rent. So it's a supportive housing program. We have people go out and visit them. It's very similar, but ours, we do not have our own places. We use property managers throughout Jefferson County, and we don't have the opportunity to have somebody that is currently a meth user or fentanyl user to be able to find them a place to live first and then work on that. So we don't have that type of option, at least through our program.
Nick, is this something we can look further into, what this Housing First program is?
Yes, and actually the timing's actually good. I believe it's this week or maybe next week, the city will be kicking off our update to the Housing Action Plan, as well as our effort to create a homelessness report. Maybe the mayor perhaps remembers me talking about a homelessness plan, and our consultants had said, before you do that, we would advise a report. And so as part of that report, we would look at inventories or need and ways to resolve that before we jump to actions and implementing or completing those actions. So timing's good, duly noted. Okay. And I think we can take care of this through our homelessness report.
Thank you. Danny, thank you for your input and bringing up our ideas. We have reached out to the reservation before, and we'll continue to do so to get them at the table. Next, construction update on Homeless Service Center. Nick? Michelle? Sorry, Michelle.
Oh, you're good. Okay, we're on. So the construction is just about wrapped up. We're wrapping up a few items that came across in our punch list items. I believe the shed was delivered last week. We're looking at a fence and still working on the reception area to put the window in there. Did that get installed? Okay, then. And we just have a few just items really that came up on our punch list and stuff, but pretty much they're operating out of it. And far as I know, everything's been running good. We haven't had a lot. Obviously, there's always some bugs that have to get worked out, but we're hoping to have everything wrapped up here real soon.
Excellent. Thank you. Homeless Service Center Operations Update. Tony.
So things continue to go pretty well. We're still running at about the same percentages, about 48% capacity. We're having 12 or 13 individuals stay overnight, and about another, on average, and these are averages, another 7 individuals come in for our dinner-only option. So that's being pretty consistent right now. You know, the population settled in, the staff has settled in to operating into the facility. So that initial part of our journey is ongoing. And then from there, in the next couple, 3 months or so, we're going to be focused on starting to raise up some services. We're waiting on some additional items we need, and they're part of our FF&E. I'll have to check in to see where they're at on the ordering, but we need the kind of the racks for the shower that will hold some of the personal care items, soaps and soap, shampoo, conditioners, and that sort of thing. And I think there are some towels that are outstanding. And then we'll have what we need. We recently had an interaction within the last couple of weeks with one of the coordinators from Shepherd's House in Redmond. And it was great because one of the things that we needed to do is to understand, you know, their protocols for, you know, how they run people through. They have a different situation because they're able to allow people to shower every night. There's no way that that can happen. It's staffing issues. The water and sewer will just kill you if you just have people that, you know, the cost of that are able to shower every night. So what we anticipate is we'll run a shower day a week. What we'll probably do during the first couple of hours is we'll get the folks, based upon those numbers that we have, we'll be able to get the folks that are in residence within the first couple hours, and then after that we'll have, it'll be open for the, about the next 6 hours for appointments. We believe that we can get about 48 people, 48 to 50 people through in an 8-hour day. We're going to need to try to figure out, you know, between volunteers, you know, staff members, how to really attend the showers, because it can't, there has to be a particular flow of it in order to effectively and efficiently get people in and out. So we feel comfortable about how we're going to approach that now. We're just waiting for the additional pieces that we need in the shower room, and we should be able to start that sometime this month. I also had a concept for a Laundry Love program. At first, I was a little stymied by it because, you know, I was concerned about, you know, business owners and, you know, having the flow of houseless people, you know, through their businesses and such for laundry. And then I had a brainstorm. Why don't we have people drop the laundry off the night before? Then we'll have our volunteers. We have a method to be able to laundry bag it, you know, catalog it per individual. Then we'll take it to the laundromat the next day. We'll have our volunteers or whatever drop coins and do the laundry, and then we'll bring it back for pickup. So, you know, when I thought about it, it just kind of dropped in, and I said, boy, this is really an effective way because nobody has to worry about, you know, having, you know, a caravan of folks through their businesses. We get their stuff at the service center, and then we return it to them clean at the service center. So we have that concept, and so we hope to be able to start that in the next month or two. So those were a couple of the personal care services. Meanwhile, we're in discussions with both one of the barbers and about, you know, doing haircuts, you know, on a campaign basis here and there. I don't know whether that'll be once a month. I made a call to the licensing division that oversees cosmetology in the state of Oregon, because I wanted to make sure, hey, could we legitimately do this? As are there any public health situations or that would prevent us from having, you know, volunteers, whether they be licensed barbers or folks at our community event in the park? We do 100 haircuts, you know, the first week of Saturday. So all of a sudden it's like, wow, we have folks that are competent enough if they would volunteer to cut hair. So I'm in the process. I'm waiting for an inspector to call me back so that I can ask her questions, because I don't want to get aside from the state in raising up a program like that. But if there's no issues with that, I think now we would have a direct pathway to be able to do the haircuts and the showers and a Laundry Love program and such. I've got the job descriptions complete for the shelter services manager that I'm doing double duty in, and I'm serving in that capacity myself in the case manager. So I'm going to be looking the latter part of this week to open up those positions. And those positions, I think, are really vital to us being able to take a step forward and start to implement some contemporary practices. I think things are going well with the guest and serving the population. You know, we have an incident. You know, when you're in the business of serving houseless folks, you know, you're going to have behavioral incidents and that sort of thing. So we've had a few, nothing that we couldn't handle, or we couldn't handle with the assistance of our local PD. PD has been phenomenal. You know, Officer Catherine and Officer Pierce. And Pierce's counterpart on the night shift is Isaiah Duarte, yeah. Officer Duarte. Yeah, these guys are just super. I mean, we make a call, and they're there. And I want to say this without flattering our department, but I want to recognize our department. Our department is really, as someone that's in the business, really showing me something, I think, about the heart that you need to have for people. We've got law enforcement officers that have a real compassionate approach. You know, they understand that, you know, certain things have to be dealt with from a law enforcement perspective. But when I interact with our local officers, you know, they're really, they help remind me of how we should philosophically and sociologically, handle difficult situations with our guests. So I just can't say enough about the support that we've had since we've opened it, because there's been a few things, but nothing that's really, really been untoward and good. So I think things are going along as well as I want the house full, more full every night. I think we have folks from the camps that are coming in, and they're accessing probably in a normal year by 3 months or so. We're like 3 months or so into our winter season, almost the whole 4 month winter season. We've served this season more people. And so what we're seeing in the Shelter Services Center is we're seeing folks that are coming up from the camps. You know, just they know that there's a warm and loving environment, the TV's on, the lamps are low, and, you know, the service, our staff is really on top of it in terms of service. And so we have the population coming to access the center, if for no other reason, a meal. But you know what? They're only going to stay when they want to stay. You know, it's they're used to being in their camps and their own environments. Occasionally, if the conditions are pretty bleak, you know, they'll do a night here and they'll do a night there, and we welcome it. We have eight or nine that probably it's like their home. They're there when the doors open at 6, they're there. And you know what? That's great. But the rest of the population is kind of an in-and-out population, either for dinner only or occasionally they'll stay a night. So I don't really know how to break into that, except to communicate by our actions and our words that you're welcome here. And they know that because they're coming for dinner. And we've had it to where, including our guests, we've had nights of 20, 27, 31 people that have been through there. That these are record numbers for FBN in our 6th year of doing sheltering. So, but the numbers of, as far as using the whole capacity of the center, there it's just not there yet for overnight. So I continue to think about that. How do we, I don't know exactly what to do that, except for having a welcoming and a hospitable environment. And just to know, hey, if you need a bed on any given night, it's there for you. I just got the, Michelle, one last comment. I just got the, the memory foam toppers. So those beds that are probably a lot more comfortable than cots, when I throw those babies on, I probably tomorrow when I put them on the bunks, it's really going to be a big difference maker. Thanks for that. So that's my report. Things are going along. Oh, thank you, Jane. I'll push those. I'll give you kind of a written posting form of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Sergeant, why would you forward those comments about your officers, please? Thank you.
One question I have is, how long will the shelter be open for winter? When will you finally say no more overnights, or when are you kind of thinking?
There's not. It is, once this center was open, it's a year-round center. So the frame of mind that I'm in is, and I've had to communicate this to my folks, hey, are we getting ready to get a last paycheck or two here? Well, why are you thinking that? We're year round. We're serving people year round. So there's, you know, as long as the funding, of course, is there. And I think there's an item lower on the agenda around that. But, yeah, we're good on definitely until June 30th.
That was the struggle that we had when the state said, hey, here's all this money for the shelter. We had to drastically change from where we used or what the faith-based network used to do to where they are now. So it was a major leap. So
we're on March 15th. I mean, it has no significance this year. We're still serving people. Got the lights on. Yeah.
Right. Update on open house on shopping cart regulations. Will.
All right. I'll start with this and then pitch it over to Nick. So we had roughly 35, 40 people in the room. All eight of the retailers were here, and the ordinance that would fine the retailers for their shopping carts did not go over well. So it was over like a lead balloon and a birthday party. Yes. It was a lead balloon at a birthday party. So the gist of it is we are working on a different plan, and this plan is to provide grant opportunities for the retailers to either lock up their carts, signage, et cetera. So we're working with the code enforcement officer, Marco, and Nick to determine the best plan of attack for it. But overall, it was great to have all eight there. They understood the dilemma. They understood the challenges we're having. And they understood the need for wanting to keep the community clean. Nick.
Yeah, I don't have too much more to add to that. It's a good summary. I appreciated the involvement of the community. And I know there was some concern for the regulations being proposed in draft form without, you know, advance notice of certain folks. It's also, I want to kind of underscore this idea of public process and community engagement. And so one of the things that we wanted to do is engage the community before it ever got to a city council. So we didn't have 40 people before the city council. And you have to start somewhere. I think it's a good opportunity to start a conversation with the community about this problem. And I think, as we all well know, homelessness is not solved through one silver bullet. We are struggling with this very complicated issue and left with few avenues to do that. And so when we do take to some of those avenues to fix it, we're oftentimes solving the problem indirectly, and it's rather hard. So it was a good meeting. It's good, some hard feedback to take sometimes, but that's also, you know, what we do. This is governance. So appreciate everyone who attended and provided feedback.
Mayor, can I tell a two-second quick story about a neat use of a shopping cart? I don't know whether...
Seconds, but go ahead.
Okay, 2 times 30. I don't know whether this is appropriate, but I've made it clear to folks that you can't bring and leave shopping carts on the property. It's like they got to go off the property. So, but last night, there was an individual that delivered a disabled woman in a shopping cart. The stuff was under her, and I go to the door, and she's on top of the stuff in a shopping cart. So I'm like, this is new. So we safely get her out the shopping cart. I said, don't worry about it, bro. Let's get your stuff, and then I'll push it down to the end. And we transferred her to a wheelchair, and it was a great usage of our supportive care room. So last night we were able to house this disabled, I think temporarily disabled woman, and use our equipment in our supportive care room. But the method of delivery was a shopping cart.
On the order of humor, I did do our first site visit at the Initiative Brewing construction project last week, and they've got the whole inside of it torn up. I mean, there's trenches that are almost 5 feet deep for sewer and utilities. They're redoing the whole inside of the building, and as I literally walk over this four-foot berm of dirt, I look up, and there's a shopping cart full of insulation. So I looked over at the owner, and I said, Ryan, have you been paying attention to the news? And he says, yes. I said, what in the heck are you doing with a shopping cart in here? And his response was, Well, they were left out back after we got the homeless people off of the property that people wanted, and we figured we could use them. So, you know, you got to have a chuckle in there as well.
Right. No, I heard it. Heard about it from my brother in Missouri. Okay. Status of Homeless Service Center operations funding from COIC, the estate. Is that you, Nick?
Well, I just wanted to, again, not lose sight of this. And I know Michelle and I have had conversations with COIC. Gosh, it seems like 2-3 months ago. It's probably more than that. Likely the governor's or the legislature would approve more operational dollars, and that does appear to be the case. And so I want, I think it's Gene. I'm glad you're here today. And yeah, right. Yeah. So that's something we can't lose sight of. So Tony, as you're working with CYC, if you're not, let me know. I presume, Michelle, are you still engaging with them or not?
No, because the funding, the extra funding will go through FBN. They would be the applicant, not the city.
Okay.
So I can tell you the status of...
So real quickly, we were approved from, I think this is okay, it's public, from 1-1 to 600 to 630 of 24, we were approved for $339,617 for the 6 months, and so that was great. That was the 11-15, and then COIC reached out. They wanted an early indication, so basically, I took my budget and annualized it and made a small change. So the budget I just submitted for 7/1/24 through 6/30/25 was $700,000 and change. So it was basically the half year budget annualized with a small change to account for a modification that we needed to make. So that's what's before COIC, and I take it that that will go ultimately to the MAC group at some point for approval.
Is there any assistance that the city staff, perhaps the mayor, that we can assist in that process? Or
yes, to put in a good word for the Shelter Services Center in Madras, but I think it's a very rational budget. It was based upon the half-year budget that was approved that we're just now beginning to operate on, got the agreement signed, and figuring out how the flow of money is going to work. But it's basically we annualize the budget and then put in a small bump to it. So if you could advocate for the importance of approval of that, that'd be great.
Yeah, I'll work with Will. Maybe we can email the director and see what else we could do based on that.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. And I'll forward those on.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Gene. Our new code enforcement officer, would you like to make the introductions, Nick?
Sure. Very brief. I want to introduce Marco Mack to the group. He's our new code enforcement officer. He's working three quarters time, so 30 hours a week. He's hitting the ground running and has been very helpful. And with that, I'll kind of pause there. I don't want to steal any of his thunder. Misconstrue anything, but he's doing a fantastic job and look forward to his work.
Very pleased to join the city and working for Nick and with FATMA, and had opportunity to work in three counties and two other cities throughout my whole career, and really enjoy the opportunity to come join you. My background is mostly related to fire working on a fire engine for 30 years, and a portion of that working in fire prevention, and most recently as deputy fire marshal. So very familiar with interacting with the community, but engaged with helping the community be successful versus pursuing, you did this wrong, you need to fix it. So, and I'm pleased to see that that's what the city is looking for. So excited to meet everybody. And one of the projects I'm working on right now is reaching out to each of the managers of the stores for shopping carts and helping them be successful with what they can do. And we're putting some ideas together for how to outreach to the community to participate in that effort, too, of helping keep the parking lots looking unscattered with carts everywhere. And even the idea of if I show up to the store and I push a cart inside, I'll be saving a cart and helping the store folks with managing their loose carts everywhere. Thank you so much for the opportunity to work with you.
Thank you, Marco. Storage equipment for homeless individuals. Nick?
Yeah, I'll start with this, and maybe Marco and or Michelle can pipe in if needed. But we've purchased a shipping container, a 20-foot shipping container that'll be placed, I'll say, near the homeless service center. It'll be in the Oak Street right-of-way. So we're scheduling a site visit with Public Works, Marco, and Tony's team to make sure that the exact location is known so we can get that delivered. In the meantime, we'll also work on preparations for that. We need a little bit of grading and gravel for that. And while they're grading and graveling for the shipping container, we're also going to ask them to do the same for our secondary homeless camp site. And to be clear, one of the things that we're looking to do is start enforcing our camping regulations. And to do that, one of the things we're seeing the need to do is to relocate the people currently residing in Willow Creek and move them to the other location, because there's so much stuff there that we just need to remediate the property. So if we can get that graveled and somewhat leveled, we'll also put some kind of concrete barriers around it to kind of define the area that the second camp location will be, or where they're permitted to camp. Those are the things we're working on right now. As soon as we get the shipping container delivered, we'll immediately start outfitting it with shelving and some lighting and things like that, so we can start get that piece taken care of. The other component we're working on, it's sad to see Sergeant Webb leave, but tomorrow is our first coordination meeting that he is leading with several different agencies. He's deserved credit for this. He identified the need, and he's bringing people together to do it. And so we've basically have law enforcement, public health, code enforcement, and several other agencies involved. And the idea is that team will go down to the camp in Willow Creek on some regular basis. I don't know if that's daily. I don't know if it's weekly. I don't know what that is. But the idea would be, over the course of several months, starting working with those individuals down there to bring their camps into compliance. So day one, you might say, okay, well, is that trash, yes or no? Well, if it's not, can you please put it in the dumpster? So with that regular intervention, we can start to kind of winnow down or shrink the size of their camps or bring their camps into compliance, so that when we do start enforcing that, number one, they know the individuals involved to be the same people that are going down there on a regular basis. Number two, they already know the rules and shouldn't be surprised. And three, what is actually required for them to come into compliance with our camping regulations. And so we'd like to do this over a couple months. So that's kind of where we're at. All the efforts are related, whether you're talking about storing someone's personal belongings after they've left or we need to relocate them. That's related to this larger effort of cleaning up the creek, enforcing these regulations, but also having the infrastructure and administrative support to do that. So last piece would be is that city staff would like to have a work session with the city council in about 60 days to give them a report on our efforts. And so we're actively trying to calendar that, get that on a calendar. At the same time, we don't need to wait 60 days for this committee, we'll just continue to update the committee, Homeless Advisory Committee, on our efforts. So, but I think we're making some nice progress. Credit to Marco and Public Works being flexible and willing to help solve some tough problems.
Nick, how's the storage container going to be utilized? How do they just, is there a way of checking in their stuff and then getting what they need, or how's that going to work?
Well, and that's part of our research or work that we need to figure out. But in general, in the situation you get to the point that you need to relocate someone, and they're not able to take all their belongings with them, we would store those items, right? We would take them to the shipping container and put them in there. So I'm envisioning some shelving, some bins, things like that on the inside that we will log in our code enforcement database with pictures and things like that. So if Nick Sneed left his belongings there, we're going to have a picture of it in the database. We're going to know when we put it in there. And then 30 days thereafter, we'll have an automatic reminder within the software that if it's unclaimed, we'll go through the disposal process should it be necessary. But the idea is that if Nick wants his belongings out of the storage, he needs to give city 24-hour notice. And so they'll call City Hall. They'll call the code enforcement officer, identify that they have some belongings that they'd like back, and we'll start that. And the next day, we'll work with them on date and time, or a certain time for them to be there. Code enforcement officer will be there to unlock it and get it out and give them their stuff.
These are items that, not items they check in, these are items that were left that we clean up after.
Yes, this is not a voluntary storage situation, right? Right, like if it's left behind and there is some general value to it, use of it, we'll store it. If it's, I'm going to make this up, a trash bag full of, empty soup cans and other trash in there, we're not saving that, right? We're going to dispose of it. But if it's, like a camp stove, we would certainly save that. If it's a sleeping bag that's, of decent quality, it's not ruined or soiled or wet, we're going to keep that and store that for them. Those sorts of things. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
And then, Mr. Chair, I spoke to Bob with ODOT, the regional manager, and we're working on a land transfer for some property up by the warming shelter.
To that property there just south of the Sonic and that empty lot?
Actually, west.
West, okay.
So they own kind of an L-shaped property. And we're asking for just a portion of the upper kind of L.
Okay.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that'll take 6 to 8 months through their process to get that done. But it is something we're working on.
Is it something they're agreeable with?
Yes.
Okay.
But to be clear, the frustration is 6 to 8 months ago, we notified them.
I know it has
been. I remember that. Okay. Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, the wheels of government churn very slow.
So. And they need to increase the air pressure of their tires, too. Okay, thank you, Nick. Anybody have any questions on what we've gone over today? Any other announcements?
Oh, I did want to bring to the attention of Tony and others that I failed to forward you this email. There's a resiliency grant that's come out through, I can't remember what agency, state agency, but it's, quote, fairly easy to apply for funding. And there is operational dollars involved, and there's a little button you can request assistance to apply for the grant. And PSU staff will help you apply for the grant. So I did that for the city, identified some operational dollars for the shelter, didn't know how it's going to work, but you may want to do the same as well. But you can also buy equipment. Okay, so I'll forward you the link. You can take a look at it, and I'd encourage you to connect with PSU because they're going to have a better idea of the grant guidelines, what you can and can't do.
So. Wonderful. Thank you. I'm not going to turn it down. Yeah. And get by with a little help from my friends. Yeah.
Anything else? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and adjourn at 2:40.
Recording stopped.